The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome everyone to episode number 413 of, I don't know, Chad calls it somewhat dangerous on occasion. I don't know what he's talking about. But I am Nate Dawson. Chad decided that because nothing important happened today, he just didn't need to be here. Really straight up said that we could tell you guys that he doesn't like it and doesn't care about your happiness. So you're stuck with me and this handsome gentleman, Chris Garber. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to have the run of the place right now. I think we could just kind of go nuts.
I apologize in advance if my Simpsons knowledge is not up to snuff. So, I don't know. I haven't been paying attention to the internet today. Is there baseball? Are we locked out? Still lockout, right?
Baseball is back. It is time for all the fun you have waited for. Payroll will be aligned soon. Don't you wait, Reds fans. Don't worry. It's coming. Payroll alignment. Bobbleheads and a parade.
So many bobbleheads. It's been sort of disheartening. There was like a moment when the news broke and everybody got super excited. And then all of Reds Twitter just kind of shut down. They're like, our moment's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like disgustingly not that sad about the lockout. Like, it was frustrating and it's stupid, but I was like, I mean, partly because it's spring training and lots of other things going on in sports, but It's like, I didn't care that much. And so I'm glad it's back, but yeah, now we're back to cheering for a team that doesn't care. They're probably going to fight a lot less hard to win the season than they did to win the negotiations against the players. And that's depressing.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. I saw Nick Kroll had a statement a few minutes ago saying that they're going to take some time and, you know, pour over the CBA, and they're excited to finish out their rosters while every other team, like, I expect that there will be moves made while we're filming this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he means to look up. There's no section on a salary floor. They don't have to worry about the luxury tax. I mean, I guess maybe the manipulating service time area might be of interest to the Reds.
You might want to see how the draft lottery works.
Yeah, that's true. He needs to bone up on the draft lottery. I mean, I don't really understand what difference it makes to them. The whole point of this negotiation was for teams like the Reds to throw the brakes on teams like the Mets, who are apparently going to try to win, or the Dodgers, or the Red Sox right now. They don't have up for themselves. It's more just about trying to bring the level down. But yeah, 12 playoff teams, buddy. 12 of them.
I know you're a huge fan of that.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Hey, at least it's not 14.
I guess it is.
So, yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, lockout's over. I think this the CBA goes through 2026. That's 99 days of, I don't know, I would say misery, but at least we didn't trade anybody. So it could have been worse. Spring training starts March 13th. That's That's Sunday.
Sunday.
So I'm pretty pumped about that. I think we'll start seeing a lot of players go tomorrow, really. Opening day, April 7th. Reds starting on the road. Do you have any feelings about that?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious thing is to draw the 1990 parallels where off-season work stoppage led to a slight delay in the start of the season, and then the Reds, you know, went wire to wire. So, sure.
You heard it here first.
Probably going to happen.
The 2022 Reds are going wire to wire. Love it.
I mean, you've got – like, there's a lot of similarities. We don't talk about this enough, but the similarities between these teams are, like, striking. I mean, both of them on a normal night will put 9 players on the field. And, you know, wearing uniforms. I mean, look, I'm kidding around. I mean, gosh, look at it. Like, on one hand, you have Barry Larkin. The other, you have Kyle Farmer.
Parallels.
Same deal. Is Kyle Farmer the shortstop? I know it's not on the agenda, but is Kyle Farmer the shortstop on April 7th, 2022?
I think so. I don't want to feel that way, but it seems like if there's going to be a rushed spring training, I can see them using that as an excuse to keep the known commodities in play.
Yeah, if you don't care about winning.
Well, they certainly don't. We're in no position to debate that. So the Reds home opener is going to be on the 12th, and they are playing the Zombie Indians. I am going to struggle to remember to call them the Guardians.
So, wait, the Ohio Cup, the Startley?
I mean, that's must-see TV.
We love the Ohio Cup. Man. it's really exciting.
You planning on getting any of those?
No. Nope. Again, I'm not in a hard boycott like some people are, but I am in no rush to put money in Cabbage Man's pocket. So if my kids want to go, I'll go. If I stumble into tickets, I'll be there. But
yeah.
I'm got a statement. Did you see we have a statement from ownership?
Ooh.
Now, listen,
a cheerless leader had to say.
Yeah, so, you know, I want to set the stage. The Reds, I'm sure the ownership and the PR team crafted this statement over, some time this afternoon, really wanted to make sure that their thoughts made it their way out to the fan base. And the media, you know, took the statements and made sure they reported them. So everyone gets this news and is able to react and take the action that the team really wants. So here it is. We cannot wait to welcome our fans to Great American Ballpark for the Reds' home opener on April 12th, when we will celebrate with all the traditions and fun that make opening day in Cincinnati the greatest day in all of baseball. Unquote. Yet. There's your statement.
Yeesh.
All of the traditions and fun will be there.
It also is the greatest day in all of baseball under the Castellini ownership, because it's the only day that you're really optimistic about the season.
Yeah. I mean, they could be 0-5 by that day, I guess, this year. I know people make these statements all the time, and I should just shut up and leave it alone. But like, what was the point of that? Like, what were they like? Oh well, you know, so and so in Delhi is going to hear that and
how many extra tickets do you think they sold? It's such a tone deaf administration.
Let those guys go home early today. Yeah. I'm sure they've been working hard. They got a pack for Arizona. Like, we didn't need to stick around for 45 minutes to write that.
They were sitting around a conference table, and after the end of that 45 minutes, somebody's like, "You know what? I think we've got it. This is it."
Pencil behind his ear,
sold out. I
pull it out of the typewriter. Here it is.
I don't want to stifle people's enthusiasm, because I'm excited. You know, baseball kept throwing out these false flags, these deadlines, and trying to convince people that it was really, really close when they were just using the deadline as a way to throw something else in there. But it got done. I I'm excited that we're going to have more to talk about over the next few weeks, as opposed to people just having to listen to us regurgitate, lukewarm takes about people that played shortstop for 30 games in 1982 or something.
Yeah.
Well, what else about the CBA like sticks out to you? Obviously, we get the DH, right? Like that's a big one.
That is a big one. What is the Reds' plan still to use one of their failed third basemen at that spot?
It's got to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I mean, I get, you know, like always, somebody's going to get hurt, but I'd like to see him get Robert Stevenson on the field a little more often than not. You know, when he's not catching, he can play some DH.
But yeah, I would like to see a little bit of a sort of, you know, merry-go-round of him. Let Votto take some days off from the field, get in that DH spot, and just keep those bats in the lineup as much as possible. And you talk about somebody probably getting hurt. Yeah, I mean, you don't wish it on anybody, but, you know, our opening day DH, if I had to guess, is going to be Moose. And he hasn't exactly been the healthiest player since he's been in a Reds uniform.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? The shift.
Nick Kroll, I need to take some more time to go through the CBA.
I was pretty excited about banning the shift.
I don't know all the details.
Yeah, it seems like there was some stuff reported a few days ago about bigger bases that I don't think anybody cares about. Banning the shift was a hot button one that, you know, is going to lead to some barroom arguments. But other than that, I mean, there were ads on jerseys. They got rid of the extra innings rules that they had the last couple of years. Or seven inning.
That was a fiasco.
It was a fiasco. I had one of my buddies ask me about it. He just went on a rant that one day, and I was like, "Well, there was a point in the season where the Reds were like 9-2 in those games." I said, "Let those numbers come back to normal before I start hating on it."
I mean, I don't know what the future of baseball looks like on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, the expansion. The thing about the expanded playoffs that, like, just to like say why I hate it, is because it makes the regular season less important. Mm-hmm. Like, all you got to do is get in, and we know that in baseball and these short series, anything can happen, right? So it doesn't. You don't need to be a 100-win team anymore. You can be a 85-win team, especially if you add somebody late, and have just as good a shot as anybody else. So I don't know. It's like, as the regular season devolves, if things like that come back, like, what's the point of playing a 19-inning game when nobody cares anyway?
Yeah.
And I say nobody, I mean the players care, the fans care, but the league doesn't care. Well, the organizations won't care.
The hardcore fans care. I don't think the casual fan cares.
No, I mean, honestly, I don't know that I missed anything. I get annoyed by those really long games.
I'm old, man. I want to go to sleep.
I want to go to sleep. I like offense. By definition, an extra inning game is usually nobody scoring for a really long time. Like the star, now the stars are usually in, but like a lot of players, the starters are out because you've double switched out the wazoo to get there. So, you know, to some degree, like I've gone to a few hockey games in the last couple weeks, and two of them were overtime. You play 5 minutes, either you're done or you do your shootout. Either way, you're 25 minutes after that third period ends, you're home.
Yeah, and people raised Kane whenever NHL instituted the shootout policy, but several years in, you don't hear too many people complaining about it.
You know, they got their point thing. And
yeah, soccer did something similar. Obviously, in the playoffs, you don't want anything to do with that. Playoffs, game can go forever.
And hockey does. Like, hockey can go forever in the playoffs. So, like, I don't know. As I was saying the other day, like, I look at baseball as entertainment. It's not a religion for me.
Yeah.
It's not like sacrosanct. It's entertainment. And if the shift makes the game less entertaining, get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it does. Like, I'm still open to, like, whether, you know, Joey Gallo is a good thing for baseball.
Right. Well, I did hear an argument today that some have said that I think it was on our buddies over at Late Night Reds, they made the argument that Jay Bruce's career might have been ended because of the shift.
Right. And I think, and I'm sensitive to that, and I think that's why I dislike it. But I do think, like, if the best thing about baseball is variety, like different types of players, different types of teams, different ways to win and succeed, which, you know, was like what the 80s was like. Different styles were able to succeed. If the, you know, it's possible that the shift, a way to beat the shift is to find guys that go the opposite way a lot bit more.
Right.
But teams and players have proven either unwilling or unable to make those adjustments.
Right. That's what I was getting ready to say is that you see, especially I feel like in the NBA a lot, the league goes in a direction, the three-pointer, for example. The entire league starts shooting threes at a high clip. All of a sudden, one of the top teams last year and arguably the best team in the league this year is the Phoenix Suns, who their two main guys make a living from mid-range. They're like, okay, now everybody's playing defense to protect against the three. Let's take advantage. Baseball doesn't seem to do that. At least they haven't when it comes to the shift. Like if over the next five seasons you saw people just constantly laying down drag bunts and slapping it the other way, you wouldn't have to ban the shift.
Yeah. I think at like the individual player level, it's just too hard. Mm-hmm. Like facing a guy with incredible stuff, You can do your one thing. And like you've been doing that one thing for 20 years to get to the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And you can't go to a plan B, like unless you're Joey Votto. Like literally, it takes the best hitter of a generation to be able to do two things.
Yeah, a Hall of Fame talent is one of the very few people in the entire league.
I saw online the other day, someone's like, well, Tony Gwynn would beat the shift. I'm like, yeah, but you can't make the whole league out of Tony Gwynn's.
It's one of the best hitters of all time.
Enough. So players can't make that adjustment. And the question is, why don't teams do it? And it may be that, like, even with the shift, like, that's still smart baseball, you know, hit over the shift, in which case, I don't know what you do. I guess take the shift away and live with it. Or the guys who can go the other way have just been selected out of the game. They didn't get, you know, in the last 10 years, they haven't gotten college scholarships. They haven't gotten drafted.
Yeah.
And they're nowhere to be found anymore.
May not be the most athletic types getting those opportunities.
Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe they're playing soccer now. I don't know.
That's fair. It's a good point. It's just like you grow up and you play baseball, you're told to hit it up the middle. Your ground ball line drive up the middle is a great at bat. And then suddenly that's an out.
I don't think guys have been taught that. Like elite guys have not been taught that for the last decade plus. They've been told to bomb it, hit it in the air, hit it as hard as you can. Don't worry about, you know, a line drive up the middle is in the cage, is a two hopper to the shortstop in the field.
Right.
Launch angle and bomb.
Yeah.
So I don't know how fast the game can adjust like that.
Yeah, I agree. I get both sides of the shift argument. I do. It seems like – what was the stat I read? The average viewer, the average Major League Baseball fan is 57 years old. The average NBA fan is 37. Like that's a problem. A lot of that could probably be solved with marketing. We all know that the MLB does nothing to market their best players. But adding some other little things to make the games a little bit shorter, make it a little more fun. We talked about how, you know, expanding the playoffs is less than ideal. But if you're going to do it, do something fun. Let the division winners choose their opponent. Like, get creative, get weird with it. Because, you know, think about I hate to keep using NBA analogies, but the NBA All-Star Game when they let the two captains just pick teams. It's fun.
Yeah.
People tune in, like they actually care. It's just a weird little gimmick that can get more eyes, more casual eyes on the product.
I mean, you know, I've got a small sample here, but my kids play baseball. They play other sports too. My kids won't watch a baseball game on TV. They won't. I mean, maybe a playoff game. They'll watch the home run derby. But a regular old game on a Tuesday night in July, they're out. Now, they'll watch NFL every week. They'll watch basketball games, college and pro. But you put a baseball game in front of them, and they just are out.
Yeah, I mean, football's easy. It's easy to be a fan once a week. NBA, a couple times a week, and they've got every single clip, you know, on TikTok.
Yep.
You can watch everything important that happens on Instagram and TikTok. Baseball does need to embrace that. I hate it because I think anything that involves more TikTok and Twitter is bad for me, America, the youth, the entire world. But baseball needs to do something. And we'll see if they do. I think that, I mean, we're aware of these problems. They have to be too, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but, you know, I don't know what they do. I mean, if they're smart, and they're kind of smart, they realize that their average age is 57 and they stop catering to that group and start looking for new ones. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Old time to complain when somebody's on the lawn.
That's right. Well, you know, at least we get to have these conversations now. We get to see what happens when they put it in action because baseball is back. I've mentioned this before. I've successfully convinced my better half that this is a job and I have to watch all of the games. So that might just be torture for myself, having to watch the Reds every day.
You're going to convince the IRS.
Yeah. I'll leave that up to Chad. See if he can pull some strings. Other news of the week. You know, there's not going to be anything that sort of trumps what we just talked about, but the big article that made the rounds was from our buddy Hal McCoy about how our dear leader and owner, Mr. Castellini, once tried to get him fired. I can't say I'm surprised.
I can't either. That's shady. I don't know when that would have been. It's got to be pretty late because I think at the time Hal was working for like it's shady. I mean, I think the takeaway from that is if he's doing that to McCoy, who at the time of, you know, enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame and was only like adjacent to the Reds, he's got his thumb on everybody in that broadcast booth. And he's, you know, not afraid to exert a little control over the message.
Yeah, I think it kind of highlights the importance of, I won't say this podcast because nobody should listen to us. We make that known. But independent journalism, the podcast sphere, other Substacks and Patreon accounts, those things are – they allow you to get out and be honest, cover the team honestly and transparently without having to face the repercussions. And I think that's new.
I think so. I mean, I think it's some people will disagree, but I think it's very fair to say that the coverage of the Cincinnati Reds is not as extensive or aggressive as, let's say, the Yankees encounter on a daily basis.
I don't think that the media is even playing. They're not even playing the same game.
No. It doesn't seem to be a very competitive group, if that makes sense. You know, I think back on all the old, you know, I went to journalism school. It's not just old movies. Like, trying to scoop the competition was a thing at some point. And there's, you know, one guy in particular who's been around a while who just kind of goes along. And then, you know, a couple of younger guys who are trying to make their bones and a guy who does break a lot of interesting stories and tries to get interesting angles on stuff. But I don't know. There's not like that cutthroat thing.
Yeah, it's weird that in a society where a viral clip can take you from a nobody to instant fame, that our people covering the Reds seem so reluctant to come anywhere close to that.
I mean, how many times does your Twitter feed get hit four times in a row from everybody covering the team with exactly the same quote or remark? And I know they're limited, especially now. Like, they're all watching a screen with Nick Kroll on it, so there's no way to get something else. But I don't know. I mean, guys have phones. It's just surprising to me. And I don't know. I think the industry's changed, and I think it's – I think the teams control so much more than that. So it's not all the media guys, but it's interesting to me that, you know, it takes a guy who's literally been doing it for 50 years to draw the ire of the ownership.
And he still had to lobby to keep his job. That was a frustrating aspect. But we all know that, you know, ownership front officer, largely a bunch of turds. So no need to belabor that point too much. What do you think some of these next steps are going to look like for the Reds? Steve Mancuso had a great piece called, you know, he listed out three steps to fix the Reds. I don't know if you got a chance to give it a read, but his first one was hire a smart, modern outside person to run the organization, which I have a hard time disagreeing with. Don't know if they need to be outside the organization, but, you know, if it's a numbers game, yeah, they probably are. Number two was return the payroll plan to the plan they had in 2020. Not the hottest of takes. It's hard to disagree with. It's hard to see happening. Then number three was probably the most important, the biggest step the Reds ownership could take to fix this club is get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, well, I think that's all of it. I mean, I don't know. Nick Kroll may be fine. Nick Kroll may be the young blah-bitty-blah guy just from inside the organization. If you don't let him do his job, you know, if you've got an owner who's all the way down in the weeds yelling at a reporter, then I think we know that we know where the problem is. It's a one-point plan to fix the Reds.
Yeah, you're going to have to ask people who seem to relish being in charge to do way less being in charge.
And look, man, if Bob Castellini retires tomorrow, his family's still running the team. And I don't know anything about whether his son is good, bad, or indifferent. Is he part of the problem? Is he holding back the tide? You know what I mean? Is it like he's the only guy that's keeping them from losing 120 games? I don't know. Is he just as bad as the big boss? I don't know.
If he is the only guy keeping us from losing 120 games, like I will change my tune immediately. Run him up the ladder. Climb him to the top.
But I don't think we know anything about him other than his last name.
Yeah. I mean, the Reds were one of only three teams before the lockout to not sign a free agent. I don't think the next couple weeks look drastically different.
No, they're going to cut more guys. I mean, if they do anything, they're going to be getting rid of more players that you've heard of.
So, yeah, so we should be getting ready for plenty of trade rumors. I think that we're going to hear a lot about Sonny Gray, Luis Castillo, and Tyler Mahle. Do you think anybody else needs to be looking behind their back?
No, because anybody else isn't tradable. Like Nick Senzel can go ahead and sign a long-term lease in Cincinnati because nobody else is going to take it.
Or there, you know, players that might have some trade value are still cheap, so why mess with that? Well, to get away from some of this terribly depressing stuff that we always harp on week to week, something I thought about and I was curious to get your take on was how do you think a shortened spring training affects the battle for the number five spot in the rotation? Because I think a lot of people, even if you know, somebody like Sonny Gray gets traded, for example, you've got that open spot. A lot of people thought that Hunter Green might be in pole position to take that, but he hasn't been able to work with the big club in this lockout because he's on the 40 man. Whereas somebody like Nick Lodolo has been down there battling for a couple weeks. Who do you think has the leg up there?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what Lodolo has been like. Has the local has not been down there, right? They're not covering minor league spring training.
I haven't heard much. There's been a couple pieces here and there, but it has not been the coverage that you would expect. So I don't know if they haven't been allowed to or what the deal is. But it would seem like that somebody like Lodolo or, you know, one of the other sort of, you know, talk about Reaver, Sam Martin, some of these other guys would have an opportunity there when somebody like Hunter Green now has every reason in the world to, or the Reds have every reason in the world to try to keep him down a little bit longer and, you know, mess around with that a dirty word, service time.
Yeah, supposedly there's some things in the CBA to address that, but the only one I saw was the deal about they get a free draft pick if they get a rookie of the year or second place, you know, something like that. So I don't know that if there's anything else in the deal that is supposed to address service time, but that's probably not enough to keep the Reds from cheaping out.
No.
I mean, a draft pick is just another guy they got to pay.
Yeah. So maybe they can choose. That. Maybe they can choose to give up a draft pick. Go the reverse punishment. I don't know. I wouldn't be brokenhearted to see Ladarin and just, you know, take that number five spot and sit in it for the rest of the year.
It'd be interesting anyway. I mean, the good news is it does seem like the guys – you know what? It's going to be like Jeff Hoffman, isn't it? I was going to say, like, it's exciting. You're going to get a new guy, a prospect, someone with a high upside. But it's going to be Jeff Hoffman.
They wouldn't let us have happiness.
Nah. I think, doesn't Reaver San Martin feel like a future obscure Red?
Oh, gosh, yeah. There is one degree of separation between Reaver San Martin and Luis Alberto Bonilla. No offense to either player.
Like if you had come on here and said they're bringing Reaver San Martin back and he's 46 years old and he pitched on the 2003 Reds, I would have been like, I'm not sure, but that sounds right. Yeah.
I guess the question is, I just started watching Succession recently. I'm only on like episode 3. By the end of it, will I have a better concept of what it's like to be Bob and Phil Castellini?
I haven't watched the show either, so is it worth it? What's your early recommendation?
It starts out pretty hot. TBD, I'll get back to you on that, but okay. I feel like I am becoming an expert in rich buttholes, so I think there's some carry over there.
All right.
So I guess we should move on a little bit. We're 30 minutes in here. We would have done the top five left fielders. That was the position that was up this week. It didn't seem right having that conversation without Chad here.
He's such a big Ryan Ludwig fan that, like, you're right. It wouldn't have been right.
He doesn't get to wear the Ludwig jersey that he's been dying to bust out for y'all. So we are going to table that for a week, mostly because of our, you know, group love affair with Adam Dunn, and we want as many people to be involved in that as possible, including Marty Brenneman. Special guest next week.
Is he our guest next week? Is he going to be a guest on the pod?
I don't think that.
Are you leaking that right now?
Maybe I'm starting to speak it into existence. Like if
Marty, that's where Chad is right now, folks. Chad is right now as we speak in closed door negotiations with the Brenneman camp.
Rumor has it, Chad put out a deadline of midnight tonight.
And tomorrow we'll have another deadline.
But I heard that as we were approaching the witching hour, Marty tried to require that Tom also gets brought on, and that was a deal breaker for the Riverfront people. Anything
else next week to hear the mystery guest.
Anything else you think we need to touch on before we get to some viewer mail questions?
No, I don't think so. Well, I'll pocket my Lance Nick stories for next time.
Yeah, we appreciate that. All right, so on the viewer mail, as always, these are real questions from real listeners and viewers and friends from the Patreon family, patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. Go there, support the community, support all of us. If we don't have any money, then my future wife is going to realize that this isn't a job, so... Do it for me, if nobody else. But one fun thing you get to do is ask random questions, and we give stupid answers. So first up this week, and Jerry, if I mispronounce your last name, I apologize. It's Jerry Suduth. I'm going to go with Suduth. And I guess this one goes straight to you, Chris. He says, what was your favorite tidbit you learned in your research for the Big 50? Also, sell the team.
also something to keep up. That's a good one. You know, so many great stories you learned, but I think one of them that I was thinking about the other day was the fact that one family were the groundskeepers for the Cincinnati Reds from like 1878 to 1970. It was like four generations of the same family. And I actually connected with like their grandson on Twitter a couple weeks ago.
Okay. And,
yeah. Yeah. But it was really cool. You know, just all the innovation and just kind of the off the field stuff. I thought that was a really cool story. And you know, I'll read it when you buy the Big 50, the men and moments that made the Cincinnati Reds.
Some have called it literally the greatest book of all time. I've heard that. I think it was my mom that said that, but you know, she's a smart lady. No, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad that was your pick. I thought that was such an interesting chapter to read through. You don't expect to read something like that. The 50 greatest moments in a franchise. Maybe it says, you know, as much about the franchise as it does about this awesome family. But how cool is it that is such a story part of the, you know, the Reds history, and that you guys made a point to cover it. So glad that was your answer. Glad y'all covered it. That's awesome. All right, moving on. Next question is from, man, you guys, those last names are tough. Brian Bouts, B-A-U-T-E. Chris, do you know how to pronounce that?
I'm guessing Bouty, but.
We'll go with Bouty. I feel like I should have gone back and researched, like, Chad's pronunciations. Brian says, Brian B. said, if you were a billionaire and wanted to start a new competing baseball league, which five current MLB players would you want to sign first, considering both talent and marketability? It says a lot about the state of our league when I think two of the last 3 weeks we've had people post questions about what we would do if a new league was started. People are willing to get Saudi money to start a new league.
I love this question.
Who you got? Who are some of yours?
I mean, I think Ohtani's the easy number one, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's the guy, international pitcher. I mean, just historic figure, awesome player, kind of a fun dude, and has the international, like, part of it. I mean, he's got to be the number one.
Got to do it. Tall, he's a strapping gentleman. Easy number one pick. My number two would be Ronald Acuna Jr.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that. I think we need a little more of his sort of attitude and approach to the game.
That's pretty good. I think Mookie Betts, probably.
Yep, Mookie could be on there.
That's a fun player who is, you know, likable and obviously really good.
Yeah, he's not bad. He's not bad at the baseballs. Tatis Jr. I think
that's probably pretty good.
Just a stud. He's got that flair that I think baseball needs a whole lot more of.
Yeah, and then I think for the fifth one, I would take this is kind of a different idea, but I'd take LeBron James.
Ooh, I think you're going to sell some tickets and get some eyeballs on the TV that way.
Taking LeBron James into my baseball league. I was looking at this article that was about Q scores, which is kind of like a popularity and awareness rating of different types of celebrities and public figures. And this was like 3 years ago, but they said that Mike Trout was as recognized as Kenneth Faried, like the backup forward or whatever from the NBA.
Who I don't think is even in the NBA anymore.
Yeah. 22 was his score, which, you know, I think like Tiger Woods is probably like a 75 or an 80.
Wow.
I mean,
that puts it in perspective. The best player of our generation, one of the best players of all time.
And nobody knows anything about him.
You might not recognize him if he walks into your neighborhood bar.
So I like our league.
I think we got a good top five. I love the LeBron pick. The next question is probably my favorite question that's ever been asked on here, and I spent an embarrassing amount of time thinking about this. I've actually thought about this and had this conversation at several bars throughout the last decade or so. And it's from our buddy Joe Farsing. Joe asks, fictional baseball all-star team. So Roy Hobbs plays right field, Ricky Vaughn on the bump. Who else you got? This has always been one of my favorite barroom conversations. Like, if you could make up a baseball roster only of movie characters, who is it? So I love this. Do any of them pop in your head right away?
Yeah, I think I got Crash Davis behind the plate.
I also had Crash. I went Benny the Jet Rodriguez, shortstop.
The adult version or the Sandlot version?
Well, the Sandlot version starts, but when we need to pinch runner, we'll call in the adult version.
Wasn't he like that's part of the movie is so confusing because he's got to be like 46 years old, and he's still serving as a pinch runner.
Yeah, you see Smalls in the studio, obviously well past his playing days.
With his really, really long hat.
Jet Storm. I don't care. It's one of the greatest movies of all time.
Center field, Kelly Leak.
Ooh, that's a very good choice. I was leaning more Willie Mays Hayes at center field, but yeah, Kelly Leak, love it. Your list tends to get a little major league heavy, so...
Yes.
First base, I went with Stan Ross, Mr. 3000, Bernie Mac, the most realistic athlete, professional athlete.
What position does Crew Haywood play? Is he a DH?
I think he's got to be the DH.
Because he's tough, man. He's a tough out.
That's so good. Second base. I had a hard time with this one. I had to do some research. My second baseman, Marla Hooch from League of Their Own.
There was a second baseman. There's a movie from called Long Gone. It was an HBO original from the late 80s. And it was set in the minor leagues in the 1950s. And it had William Peterson – later known as the guy from CSI or To Live and Die in L.A. And I think he was like a he was kind of like a Crash Davis player, like a minor league lifer. But they had a second baseman played by Dermot Mulroney named Jamie Don Weeks, who was pretty tough.
Dermot Mulroney, another super realistic professional athlete.
That movie had Teller in it also as the son of a team owner.
Teller from Teller. Okay. Why not? Who's your manager? There's so many good manager candidates. I went with Billy Haywood from Little Big League.
I got to go with the guy from The Natural, the Wilford Brimley. Can't remember his name in the movie. But there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, I forget his name, but from Lou from Major League is incredible. You do, yeah. Tom Hanks, League of Their Own. There's so many good ones. Yep. Go watch Little Big League if anybody hasn't watched it at all or hasn't watched it in a while. The most underrated baseball movie out there. The inner circle, as Chad would say. All right, who's next? Oh, this is a fun one too. Our buddy Nathan Sturworth. So to rank these Reds utility players from best to worst, he went Jeff Branson, Lenny Harris, Chris Steins, Ryan Frill, and he said Ryan Farmer, and a quick baseball reference search did not lead me to any strong conclusions as to who Ryan Farmer is, so I can only assume he means a friend of the program, Kyle Farmer.
All right, so are we looking career or Reds? I mean, it's mostly the same. But
I'm going straight feelings, no facts.
Okay.
No facts allowed. No stats. Just based on your memory.
So I think Friel is probably the best of those guys. Friel was actually a pretty valuable major league player for a couple years.
Mm-hmm. I had Friel number one.
You had him first?
Yep.
Yeah. Who do you have second?
I went with Chris Steins, and that was just because I remembered him the best, which is saying a lot about Kyle Farmer.
Yeah, Steins had a couple of years too where he was really good. Like his first year and a half, 2 years with the Reds, he was really hitting well.
Yeah, they really liked him in Cincinnati too. Number three?
I mean, I think it's probably Farmer, because the other two guys just didn't play very much. Like, they were interesting guys, and Branson you kept thinking was going to be something. But, you know, Farmer, for all the beating we give him, like, he can play shortstop in the major leagues and be just a little bit below average hitter. But I could be convinced otherwise on this.
No, I think that's pretty reasonable. And you know what? If we're, you know, if we're lucky, we can bump Kyle a couple spots up on this list by the end of the year after he starts 162 games. Shortstop.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know Branson or Lenny Harris. I mean, Lenny Harris was – he played a long time after he left the Reds as a pinch hitter for just like 15 years, right?
Yeah. 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. That was a pretty fun question, though. And anytime I get to get an excuse to go back and look at Ryan Friel defensive highlights, it's worth it. Our buddy Kyle Kapler asked probably the deepest, most introspective, most relevant question that we've had on here in a while. Kyle said, what's the point of being a Reds fan?
Got me.
The 2 to 4 weeks of unbridled optimism.
For me at this point, it's like, it's really only about other Reds fans. It's only about the people that I've met and the relationship I've got, family, friends, over almost 50 years of doing it. So it's not, my relationship with Reds baseball has very little to do with the Cincinnati Reds organization or the baseball playing on the field right now.
Yeah, there's a there's almost a shared trauma aspect to it. Kyle, why do you do that to us? Why do you have to ask us these things? Moving on from Kyle, I'm going to go to my optimistic amigo, Joey Gaditsa, our friend from the cold, frozen north. Joey says, hey, guys, baseball back now. Who are you looking forward to watching the most this year on our beloved team? It's a loose use of the word beloved, Joey. But for Joe, it's Ty Steve. He thinks the sky is the limit for him. Chris, who you got? Who are you most pumped to watch?
That's pretty good. I mean, if I'm pretty excited about Wadolo and or Hunter Green, just because I really haven't seen anything at all about those guys. He's heard a lot. Mm-hmm. But Stevenson, man, he might be special. He really might.
He could be.
And I think, at least me, I'm a little gun shy after the Mesoraco career that just was so promising and just was just undercut by injuries. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm a little bit hesitant to get back in that pool, but man, he's an exciting young player.
Yeah, I think that's legit. Those other guys you mentioned too, if this question was who are you most excited to watch for the next 5 years, I think my answer would be a little bit different. Bring in my boy Graham Ashcraft. But for this season alone, I'm going to go with Joseph Daniel Votto. I think I'm more, you know, stoked to see if he can do something magical one more time or two more times or three than anybody else. But there's a lot of good answers there. Next question is from Rex Scott. This is actually our last question. Rex says, now that the season is back on track, I guess that means the Beer League softball team can start in spring training. This brings to mind the fact that I don't have a roster spot. Oh, shoot. Sorry about that, Rex. He said, when I joined the family, it was felt that I was better suited to be added to our pickup basketball squad. This caused great mirth amongst friends here in Tucson who have played hoops with me. So, can I get a position on the softball team?
I don't know if we can do that without Chad here.
That's a fair question, and I feel like
Chad's the GM. I mean, I don't want to string Rex for one.
If we've already caused –
whatever, let's make the call.
If we've already caused great mirth amongst his friends, I almost feel like we should name him the – you know, the power forward for the basketball team again and just keep it going.
He's the punter.
Since we had the fictional baseball character question earlier, I'll tie into that theme. And maybe we'll set a record for most times Mr. 3000 has been referenced on a podcast. But they had a character named T-Rex Pennebaker, who was their young stud. So T-Rex, Rex, you can be our athletic slugging left fielder.
I like it. You can do that or give him Kyle Farmer's spot at shortstop.
That's a way better idea. All right, I think that just about does it. Chris, do you have anything you want to add before we call it a night here?
No, I tune in next week for the Chris and Nate show. We've changed the credentials on the website, and Chad is out. As of now, I am in charge.
There is a non-zero chance Marty Brennan will be here. I wouldn't expect it, but it's not impossible. We are sorry that you had to put up with us, not Chad. I mean, it'll probably be the most listened to episode yet, so excited about that. But, yeah, Chris, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you helping carry me through this as we fill in for that dear brother of mine. And thank you to all the listeners and viewers for giving us a platform and not turning it off yet. You can find us at youtube.com/riverfrontcincy. Like, subscribe, do whatever the screen tells you to do to make us look better. Instagram, Facebook, the riverfront.com/riverfrontcincy. If you want to join our community, we got a fun little Slack channel where we get on there and talk all kinds of nonsense, not just Reds. There's bass guitars and fantasy baseball and a shocking amount of Bengals talk. But yeah, that's it, Chris. Appreciate you. And so for Mr. Chris Garber and the ghost of Chad Dotson, this is Nate Dotson wishing you all a good night, and appreciate y'all coming out.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.